This will maximize the number of vaccines available equitably for all countries and will facilitate sharing with those most at risk.
The United States boosts vaccine sharing. It's Monday, June 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, hope coronavirus will ease. Australia's crazy ants. Finding COVID's origin. A calmer and soothing YouTube. Expanding space exploration. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The White House has announced it will deliver the bulk of its first 25 million donated doses of COVID-19 vaccine through COVAX, the United Nations-backed program delivering vaccines to low- and middle-income countries. It's part of a down payment on a pledge to donate 80 million doses by the end of June. The Biden administration has been under pressure to share its vaccine supply. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
Three-quarters of the first 25 million vaccine doses that the United States is donating will go through the United Nations COVAX program.
This will maximize the number of vaccines available equitably for all countries and will facilitate sharing with those most at risk.
Another 6 million doses will go to individual countries, including neighbors, allies, and countries with surges or other crises. The United States has pledged to donate 80 million doses in all by the end of June.
This is five times the number of doses any other country has committed to sharing. And these 80 million doses represent 13% of the total vaccines produced by the United States by the end of this month.
But while 80 million doses will help, experts say the world is billions of doses short of what it will take to control the pandemic.
Yes, a step in the right direction, but really a drop in the bucket to what the global need is.
While more than half the U.S. population is vaccinated, access to COVID-19 vaccines has been wildly unequal worldwide.
Of the 1.8 billion vaccines administered globally, just 0.4% have been administered in low-income countries. This is ethically, epidemiologically, and economically unacceptable.
Experts say wealthier countries need to step up their donations, plus help build manufacturing capacity around the world. That will take time. One bright spot is that there are still new vaccines in development that may help fulfill the world's needs, Moss says.
We won't just be working with the current kind of portfolio of vaccines. We'll have new vaccines come along, and hopefully they'll be as safe and effective as our current ones.
The WHO this week authorized the vaccine from Sinovac, which is already in use in Brazil, Indonesia, and elsewhere. That clears the way for uptake in more countries. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Myanmar forces clash with villagers in Delta region, media reports 20 dead. Analysts say scientists should probe lab leak origin of COVID-19. Thailand concerned by Myanmar violence. Microsoft says tank man image blocking due to human error. Cambodian circus adopts no pain, no gain attitude in bid to break record. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more with video and text on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and of course our website, voanews.com. We have more VOA Asia right now. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coronavirus is raging in many parts of Asia, and if it is especially bad where you are, follow hand washing, mask guidelines, and social distancing, and have hope. Last week, Italy, one of the hardest hit nations in the world, lifted restrictions on indoor dining. Germany downgraded the coronavirus risk level from very high to high, and Israel lifted almost all pandemic restrictions. We hear more from VOA's Mariama Diallo.
Italians are welcoming an end to months of pandemic lockdown. For some, sipping coffee indoors at their favorite cafe reminds them of the simple pleasures long denied to them.
This is one of the many signs of starting again. One coffee gives us the feeling of living serenely again.
We drink this first coffee with pleasure. We are starting again. Let's hope for this for everyone. We have missed these traditions.
Italy has endured in-and-out restrictions since last year, when the country became one of the world's first COVID-19 hotspots.
Seeing this place fill up again after almost 4 months gives me a huge sense of satisfaction, above all for a place as big and important as this one.
Italy has registered more than 4.2 million COVID-19 cases, but new infections have declined of late amid a successful vaccination campaign. Meanwhile, German health officials said the coronavirus risk level in the country has been reduced from very high to high. But they warned it does not mean the pandemic is over.
It means that the second and third wave, a very, very difficult situation, has been broken. The numbers are much better than they were, but high also means they are still a risk. And if we are not careful, that could change again very quickly.
The number of new weekly cases has fallen to about 36 per 100,000 residents nationwide. And in Israel, a very special day. Almost all restrictions have been lifted, rendering unnecessary the green vaccination passes that until now had been required to access public venues.
After quarantines and close downs and all the restrictions we've been experienced, now we are opening all the activity in Israel and no more green pass.
With a population of 9.3 million, Israel has delivered over 5.4 million first doses and at least 5.1 million second doses of the Pfizer vaccine. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, tiny ants are a big problem. Happening now in Asia, a bipartisan delegation of three United States senators landed in Taiwan Sunday and announced Washington would donate 750,000 coronavirus vaccine doses to its ally. The high-profile delegation and gift comes as Taiwan accuses China of hampering its efforts to secure enough doses as part of Beijing's ongoing campaign to keep the island isolated. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great to have you with us today as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. A detection dog called Fury is helping authorities in Australia eradicate the last remaining pockets of aggressive yellow crazy ants. First discovered in Australia in the 1980s, the ants spray formic acid when aggravated and have devastated populations of frogs, lizards, and ground-nesting birds. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Rangers are approaching the halfway mark of a 10-year eradication plan in Queensland and have killed off about 85% of the known infestations through aerial and ground baiting, but stubborn infestations remain. The yellow crazy ants are about 4 millimetres long, with a golden-brown body, and have a lifespan of about 84 days. They're thought to have come to Australia inside shipping containers or other cargo. The ants are a particular menace in the far north of Queensland. They can form super colonies containing thousands of queens. It's estimated that up to 20 million worker ants can inhabit a single hectare of land. On Christmas Island, an Australian territory in the Indian Ocean, scientists say they've been responsible for the deaths of up to 20 million red crabs, a species of land crab unique to the area. Andrew Cox from the Invasive Species Council, a conservation group, says they're a major threat to biodiversity.
These ants are pretty nasty because they spray formic acid as a way of disabling their food sources, the animals and insects they attack. They've arrived in Australia without their normal parasites and predators. They could cover vast areas of northern and northeastern Australia. And when they're invading an area, it's like there's nothing else there. They just consume all of the ground-dwelling insects, lizards, even birds and small mammals. So it's really bad for the environment.
A sniffer dog called Fury is helping to detect colonies of yellow crazy ants. Scott Buchanan, the executive director of the Wet Tropics Management Authority, which is leading the elimination campaign, says the two-year-old Labrador has been carefully trained to sniff out the insects.
What we do is we get these dolls, so toys, we produce the odour from the ants, put it onto those toys, and then we hide those toys away for the dog. The dog has also been trained to not stick its snout into a nest. It will just sit down. That's the signal. I've found something. Come over and see what I've found.
The ants are part of a long list of invasive species, including cane toads, foxes, pigs and camels, that have caused ecological carnage across Australia. It's estimated that feral cats kill nearly 1 million birds in Australia every day and have caused the extinction of some ground-dwelling birds and small to medium-sized mammals. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We invite you to read and see more on this story on VOA Asia's social media, including Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. A man armed with a knife killed 6 people and wounded 14 others in a city in eastern China, according to state media. The attack was on Saturday. The suspect was arrested, and an investigation is underway to determine what unfolded in a pedestrian shopping street. You'll find this in all the big stories on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, efforts to determine the true origin of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 have proven as difficult as dealing with the virus itself. While it is known the initial outbreak occurred in Wuhan, China, details remain murky. As a result, many opinions and ideas have developed. VOA's Adriana Zhang is searching for answers and spoke with author, documentary photographer and photojournalist, political scientist and visual sociologist Dan Garrett. He begins with two ways China has been reacting to the virus origin debate.
On the one hand, anytime that you have a crisis, a government is going to energize its whole media apparatus, as well as its national security intelligence apparatuses to respond to the crisis. And so for the COVID pandemic for China, this is also a crisis for itself, as well as an opportunity to promote its image using COVID diplomacy, vaccine diplomacy, PPE diplomacy, and a variety of other types of diplomacies related to the COVID pandemic. On the other hand, because it is also considered by Beijing to be a public opinion war with the United States and with the West regarding as to who is responsible, if not for the origin of the COVID pandemic, then its spread or its intensification. And from Beijing's perspective, the COVID crisis, a global crisis, is an opportunity for it to promote the socialist system and the leadership of the Communist Party as superior to the Western system of democracy, universal values and freedom and so forth like that. So as you mentioned, China has a large global media apparatus that it has invested billions of dollars in for a long period of time. And now it's a bit natural as soon as there's a crisis, it's going to try to activate that to help its image as well as to spread its opinion other places.
Is the current push by Beijing born out of a desire to limit the influence of Western media and ideas?
You definitely have a aspect of the current information campaign from Beijing that is oriented towards discrediting Western media as biased, as racist, as anti-China. And as basically it's being tools of the United States or Western elites.
But why is China doing it now?
Well, because it's an opportunity because there is a crisis People want information because there is a lot of questions as to how the virus came to be, how the virus spread through the world, who is responsible for it. Is it a naturally occurring pathogen or is it a manufactured pathogen? Is there any state culpability in how it was released into the wild and then disseminated across the world? And then also because the Chinese Communist Party itself has set up this as a contest, a strategic contest between the West and the socialism as to which system has better responded to the crisis, which system cares more about the people, not only in their own country, but around the world. So part and parcel of Beijing's information warfare campaign using COVID at its nexus is to present the United States and the West as inhumane, as profit-driven capitalist entities that only care about making money and that they don't care about the survival or the safety of their own citizens or other country's citizens.
IFJ's report surveyed journalists. Is the result in line with your research, with your observation?
Yes. I think even though the perspective is different and the levels of analysis are different, it is very consistent, especially with their recognition that there has been a global push from the Chinese authorities to raise their profile as far as what they are doing, to raise their what we would call discourse footprint. And also something that the Chinese Communist Party calls discourse power, to increase their discourse power. So the findings of the IFJ report is very consistent with empirically documenting Beijing's efforts to do this. And one of the interesting findings in the report is that you have this discrepancy between how many journalists view the threat from Chinese propaganda or disinformation at the national level as being less than it is at the global level. And so I think this kind of highlights the perspective of how different people, what they are looking at. And I think it also kind of highlights that there may be a bit of misunderstanding as to how effective actually Beijing's media push is. The report itself basically looks at journalist unions, and so they're looking at traditional media, whether it's online media or print media or both. They do mention social media, but social media is actually one of the areas that Beijing has made a really large push in. And a lot of Beijing's social media information warriors are not necessarily officially affiliated with the state. So you may have third-party nationals. You may have quote-unquote independent media platforms and independent journalists or like Gray Zone that are out there spreading disinformation or misinformation on behalf of Beijing or other authoritarian governments like Russia.
Political scientist and visual sociologist Dan Garrett, speaking with VOA's Adriana Zhang. Join VOA Asia tomorrow as their conversation continues. Making headlines in Asia, Guangzhou, a Chinese port city of more than 13 million people, has ordered more restrictions due to a rise in COVID-19 cases that began in late May. Authorities had imposed restrictions earlier in the week but sought additional limits on businesses and social activities. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, YouTube videos that cause an autonomous sensory meridian response, or ASMR, are likely something school-age kids know all about. Their parents? Well, not so much. Karina Bafrijan looks at this new trend that some people say helps them deal with pandemic-induced stress. Anna Rice narrates her story.
It's one of the most popular trends on YouTube lately, ASMR videos. The name stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, and it supposedly gives viewers a tingling sensation that's calming and soothing. These kinds of videos started to appear online in 2010 and spread quickly. According to ASMR video researcher and professor Craig Richard, the reason these videos are so popular is that they help people relax.
ASMR has existed long before YouTube videos, but people didn't have that awareness. So in those YouTube videos, what's happening is they're just simulating real world situations that stimulate ASMR.
According to an online portal, Vice, the popularity of ASMR videos grew dramatically during the pandemic.
I think at the beginning of the pandemic, kind of scouring the internet, scouring YouTube for some kind of thing that would just take me out of this really stressful space and relax. And it just happened to be kind of the thing that worked.
Craig Richard says while ASMR videos can really help people relax and help with insomnia and anxiety, they can't be substitute for medical help.
It's definitely helpful. I wouldn't say healing, but I would say helpful. Just the way like aspirin is helpful, but it often doesn't heal. Like, you know, whatever is causing that pain is still causing that pain. ASMR videos are extremely helpful.
Richard adds that ASMR videos do not work the same way for everyone, and scientists are trying to understand why. ASMR bloggers themselves state that certain videos bring frustration and annoyance instead of calm and relaxation.
ASMR is so subjective. Something that might trigger someone else might feel like nails on a chalkboard to somebody else. Like, I love hearing fabric scratching, and my boyfriend hates it.
In the last decade, ASMR videos have gained a whole community of fans, and there are tens of millions of ASMR videos available on YouTube. For people shut in by the pandemic, it became a simple way to relax in a very stressful world. For Karina Bafrajan in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Space junk finally hits its mark. Plus, NASA is now eyeing Venus after its first major flight issue on Mars. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
This time-lapse video shows Canadarm2 outside the International Space Station, or ISS. Designers built the robot to help with maintenance, moving supplies and astronauts, and catching vehicles before berthing them to the ISS. The robot's maneuvering has brought renewed attention to the growing concern about space junk orbiting our planet. NASA estimates there are about 100 million pieces of debris that are 1 millimeter or larger, and it says even a paint fleck could damage a spaceship. Experts say the flying debris threatens everything in orbit. This week, word came that a strike actually happened on the Canadarm2 robot. NASA and the Canadian Space Agency released this image of what they're calling a lucky strike that caused a puncture in Canadarm2. Lucky because the arm is relatively small. The CSA says the robot's performance is unaffected. In other news, NASA's new administrator and former U.S. Senator Bill Nelson this week announced two robotic missions to Venus, the solar system's hottest planet and our closest neighbor. He says the research could help explain why life exists on Earth and not elsewhere that we know of in the solar system.
Planetary science is critical in answering key questions that we have as humans, like, are we alone? What implications beyond our solar system could these two missions have? This is really exciting stuff.
This won't be the first mission to Venus. The U.S. and former USSR sent multiple crafts there in the early days of space exploration, with NASA's Mariner 2 performing the first successful flyby in 1962. The upcoming missions will feature far more sophisticated 21st century technology to investigate whether Venus ever had an ocean and the history of the planet's geology. They will be the first missions in more than 30 years to a planet NASA calls hot, hellish, and unforgiving. The agency looks to launch by around 2030. Finally this week, NASA's Mars helicopter Ingenuity experienced its first major in-flight problem since it first flew in Martian skies last month. After a minute in flight, one of several onboard cameras failed to register with the navigation system. Ingenuity flew partially blind, confused as to its whereabouts. The tiny helicopter still managed to land within 5 meters of its target. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online. We're at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We also thank our team that brings you this program, Service Chief Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.